Welcome to AMO Kenzoku, Episode 67. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who talk about all things anime, manga, and other related topics that we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hi, I'm Dylan.
Hey, I'm Sam.
Hey all, I'm Mike.
And I am tonight's host, Nick. Tonight's topic is quite possibly one of the most, iconic series to have gotten a remake in recent years. It is, of course, Ranma ½. And with that, Hashin. So, maybe start with a brief background for the three people that may have never heard about this property. One of Rumiko Takahashi's probably most iconic works. She also did Urusei Yatsura, Inuyasha, and then more recently, like, Rinne and Mao. But I would say, internationally, Ranma is either her biggest or second biggest IP, next to probably only Inuyasha, I would say. I don't know what you guys think.
Inuyasha's definitely right. Number one at this point, but
at this era, I would agree. I think Inuyasha took over in the last, yeah, I would say 10 to 15 years, but I would say prior to that, Ranma was probably,
yeah,
her,
yeah,
yeah, biggest, for better IP. Or worse, Inuyasha was like came out when American anime fandom was growing significantly, so it would have the larger fan base, but was it as omnipresent as Ranma was in 90s fandom? I don't know.
It is. I would say that it probably is a bit more accessible, and maybe that's a topic we can discuss later. But I would say the... And so it was, of course, you know, it's a manga serialized between 1987 and 1996 and shown on Sunday. It, of course, got a animated series in April of 1989, I believe. And that was the first series. And then that actually had a relatively short run. I believe it got canceled at 18 episodes. But then the staff at Dean, and basically everybody was more or less retained, kind of redoubled up their efforts and kind of, you know, refocused and reworked it a bit, and then relaunched it in December of the same year. And then it proceeded to air, I want to say, 140 plus episodes. So, you know, commercial success.
It's quite the comeback.
Yeah, of huge measure, I would say. And then became an international global hit. And, you know, had a bunch of movies and OVAs that all more or less wrapped up around 1996. There are a handful of TV specials that aired. I want to say there was one in like 99 and another one in like 2008. Huh. Or so, that were like random specials, and you can probably dig around on the interwebs and find them. But as of last year, 2024, MAPPA did a remake, as a lot of Takahashi's IPs have been getting lately. And it was produced by Netflix and animated by MAPPA. The staff was, I wouldn't say that it was loaded with any particularly noteworthy talent. The direct series director was Konosuke Uda, who I would say most famously is known for working on a bunch of One Piece, so, you know, familiar with working on long-running series. Music was done by Kaoru Wada, and the character designs were done by, why is the name slipping? Hiromi Taniguchi, who did a lot of in-between work and key animation for Ghibli, Gainax stuff, actually. So I would say pretty industry veteran level of talent. But nobody.
What about character design? Any other character design credits for them, or is this their first?
I believe this is their first character design. They did a lot of key animation and animation directing, but I believe character designing is the first. They've done like costume designs, I believe. I believe she did costume designs for Beastars.
No.
Yeah, costume design, yeah. So, you know, a lot of design work, but first character design, I would say credit is Ranma. And you know, I would say it looks fine from an animation standpoint and a character design standpoint. I wouldn't say it, you know, sets the bar particularly high. A few minor changes to things like character hair color, like famously Ranma girl type in the you know, 80s and 90s show had red, and now she's given a pink hair color, which more matches up with manga.
And you say it's kind of like fine. By what measure are you doing that? Because when I look at it, I think as a kind of a reboot, it was pretty stunning to me. Like, it was very faithful while still being very modern. I thought that was pretty, did it a really good job with that, I thought. So did you
Yeah,
mean...
I fine as in, like, nothing, well, I guess it's weird because I'm so familiar with the property that, like, seeing anything of it is kind of hard for me to, like, judge it more objectively because it's one of my favorite, like, nostalgia properties. But I do agree. I think they modernized it while retaining the authenticity of the characters, which is pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
Like, it is, I would say that takes a very fine kind of, like, balance and understanding of the property. And it's probably one of the most well-studied properties in all of manga and anime. That being said, I think the animation quality was good enough. I wouldn't say it was stellar. At least for the first, 12 episodes, I think it was fine. The one thing it did in the reboot that I think a lot of reboots do is it dramatically accelerates the storytelling, at least at the early points.
Yeah, it definitely has more modern pacing, less lingering on the reactions and more just snapping to the next dialogue or action.
I was also actually kind of impressed by the animation too. I'm judging against like standard TV animation, and obviously it's a Netflix show, so I'm sure they got more money. But yeah, for a TV show, it was pretty impressive. I guess you could say it's like standard for a Netflix TV show quality animation, but like I think it's above average at the very least.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I think that's a fair way to say it. I wouldn't say that any of the fight scenes blew me away, but I almost don't want it to blow me away. Like, I would be weird if Ranma was like super high frame rate animation. At least to me, it would feel weird. I don't think it needs it. It definitely benefits from, traditional like anime pacing, I would say. When I say traditional, I mean like more like with the 90s sensibilities. I do enjoy that the very first episode opens with, somewhere in the 1980s. So like it prefaces it by keeping it period accurate, which I do enjoy because it would be weird to see like smartphones.
Yeah, I feel like everyone having cell phones would create some difficulties with adaptation.
They've done that in different things like the new Fruits Basket anime does not set it back at the same time as the original, so people do have phones, and obviously everything is different, but in some ways that one's actually kind of very similar in that people are triggered and then transform.
Yeah, that's actually kind of true.
A couple of quick things. First, this is being recorded on the 13th of March, 2025.
Thank you.
And I did look on both Wiki and ANN. It says the break between original Ranma series was from September 16th of 89, and then the next one did start up on October 20th of 89.
Oh, really? It was just the 1 month?
Yeah, so it was super quick for whatever changes they decided to make. But
what happened? Does anybody know why?
Just say low ratings is all it says on US Wiki.
What I could dig up was it got low ratings and it was inferred that it was tied to its airtime, so it was probably airing at a weird time. And then it probably got a prime time slot and because again from there it went for another 140 episodes. So it takes very rare for an anime series to go that long.
Yeah,
especially back then maybe it was a little bit more common, but it's still what I wouldn't say is super common.
Yeah.
So. I think another super noteworthy thing is when possible they reprised all of the voices, which is amazing because Ranma is kind of the breakout show for the vast majority of those voice actors, and they all became tremendously successful up until now. I mean, famously, it was, I believe, the first main character recurring role that Megumi Hayashibara got. And she went on to do literally everything for the next 25 years. Yeah. Yamaguchi Kappe is more or less defined as the Rumiko Takahashi main male lead at this point, because he did both Ranma and Inuyasha concurrently. Mm. So, like, he was working on her properties for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah, that was sequential. Yeah, it was fairly sequential there, because Ranma TV ended, and then with movies, there was probably what, like,
1996 is probably about the last OVA and movie, and then 99 was when Inuyasha started. So he didn't have much of a break. And Inuyasha, of course, went on to do 7 seasons of its own. So, you know, it continued. And then other huge VAs include, you know, like Hiko Inoue as Kasumi, and she is, you know, famous, like the voice of like Belle Dandy.
Tons of other stuff.
Yeah. And then, you know, for me, a personal favorite is Minami Takayama, who is Nabiki, who's probably my favorite character.
Oh, yeah, me too.
and she famously has been the voice of Conan and Meitante Conan for like 1,000 years. So,
she's the singer of Tumix then, right?
Tumix, correct. She is the lead singer for Tumix as well. She is the only person to continue to do music as a career outside of Doko, which was the voice actor or actress kind of, you know, cover group that did a lot of the openings for the OVAs and movies, which are some of my favorite openings ever. I'm a reprised.
Koichi Yamadera is Ryoga. Ryoga and
the Jusenkyo guide as well.
Oh, yeah, right. And Jusenkyo guide, who is also Spike Spiegel and amongst a million other things as well. So
yeah, so it was pretty great. I would say the only non-reprisal that was, you know, because they had to replace was Kuno, because, you know, famously Hirotaka Suzuka voiced him. If for those that aren't aware, he was Kuno, Bright Noah in Gundam, Saito in the original Rurouni Kenshin, like an iconic voice. Unfortunately, he passed away from lung cancer in 2006, so, you know, he had to be reprised. Tomokazu Sugita did a really good job taking the role. He's, I think, probably most people know him as Kyon in Haruhi Suzumiya. So I think he did a really good job as Kuno. I think he stepped into the shoe as well. And but yeah, basically all of the main characters reprise. And I saw a YouTube kind of special live kind of show, stage show for, you know, announcing this new 2024 series. And it basically was something in the works for a while. And the main, I would say, like five, which is, you know, Yamaguchi Kappe, Megumi, Minami, Takayama, Kiko Inoue, you know, like all of the Tendo household, if you will, basically all agreed, like, unless everybody came back, they wouldn't want to do it because it would just feel weird and wrong. And everybody wanted to do it. Like, this defined all of their careers. This is how they built their friendships. They're all friends 40 years later. So it was really, really great to see them reprise. And for me, the big thing was, it's like they just recorded their last episode like a week ago. Like it felt like they just stepped right back into the characters like seamlessly for me. It was pretty very big nostalgia vibe for EP1. And then I watched all of it, obviously, but yeah, I would say, you know, it would have not made any sense if they didn't get the original VAs on board, because I feel like such a huge part of Ranma for me was the cast.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, they're an iconic cast, right? That launched these huge careers. So
I guess it'd be weird. They didn't have. I don't know if he's still working, but Ryonosuke Obayashi, who I did not realize was Saon. Who he didn't do it, but he's an old dude. He is for me most infamously Kichi Goto from Pat Labor, amongst 8 million other things that he's done.
Yeah, he may be past the point of reprising, or doing a lot of stuff.
So, and that's fair
some
enough,
of the roles, right. I think, is totally reasonable. Like they are either deceased or they're super old, so I think that's reasonable. But for the core, let's call it young characters. Everybody more or less came back, which is pretty great.
Even though they're much older now.
No, yeah, 60s. They're mostly in their 60s. And it's amazing. Hidako Noriko sounds better isn't the right word, but even more like like Akane, then I guess that's a good kind of segue. So Dylan, you actually made a special kind of request of the Kenzoku to actually rewatch Ep 2 of the original TV series, and then kind of do a side by side comparison with the it's called Reboot Ep 2.
Yeah, I did that just because I watched the reboot pretty much as it came out with my wife, and we were both like, oh man, this is really great, like it's really good, it's cool, it's good. And then I was like, all right, we knew we were doing this, so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go back, I'm gonna watch some of the original Ranma TV. And I did that, and then I was like, you know, I want to see one of the new episodes again. And I watched episode 2 again, and I had a very different feeling watching it a second time in comparison to watching the original. I said up 2 because kind of, whatever, skip past step 1. And it ended up being, I think, a good one, because it was still fairly in line with the actual, roughly the same plot happening, which is Ranma's first day at school. Basically,
well, I found it interesting. It almost kind of represents what we were talking about earlier about the pacing, because really, Ep 2 of the reboot is basically Eps 2, 3, and 4 of the original.
Yeah, kind
of. A little bit less of 4. But like, when you talk about the main points, that's what, you know, that content is. And they cut out a lot of, like, you know, still pans and, you know, kind of tension building, because, again, that was kind of filler. Also, I guess a topic that has come up, and it didn't bug me, but I know that there was a contingent of loud people that were complaining about censorship of it, because of course, famously, the original had quite a lot of nudity in it.
Mm-hmm.
This reboot, I think, dealt with it pretty tastefully, where they just there were scenes where they, you know, were that they deemed needed to be retained, that were in, that were bathing scenes, they just opted to not draw detail, and I was fine with that. Like, that to me, that's like, I have no issue with that. So
yeah, I can live with that, because it's what you can get away with on Japanese TV has changed considerably from the 80s to the 90s, at least as far as more mainstream time slots, in my understanding.
And it's just unnecessary, to be honest. Like even when they showed it in the Netflix one, you know, there was like no nipples.
It was just basically like an outline, right?
Yeah, and it was like, and that's, I don't even need,
it gets the,
like,
message across.
Yeah, you didn't even need to do it, right? Like, I thought that was, you could imply that many other ways, and they did throughout the show, right? So yeah, I didn't care at all that they didn't.
Yeah, it's not to say that I found the original offensive or anything. Like, yeah, it's fine for what it is. It's, you know, part of it is time. Yeah, exactly. But I was totally okay with how it was updated. One thing I did, another thing I found interesting was that, and I totally forgot until I kept reading a bit more about the original, was as I guess they did for anime in that era. They actually added an anime unique character to the TV series, and I totally forgot about him. It was Kuno's retainer, Sasuke, the ninja guy. He actually never existed in manga. They made him exclusively for the original TV series.
He doesn't show up until like season two or
yeah.
So. Yeah,
So I think they added him strategically. I'm interested to see if they add him, because also they added for the reboot, they added characters. There was that. The announcer, basically, that would show up randomly, and it was is voiced by Seki Tomokazu, and just kind of, he appears in like 4 or 5 episodes.
It's,
and
like
they
the Furikan High School announcer club guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was totally new, and honestly, I thought it was fine. You know, they took their design choice. One thing I noticed about the reboot, they went a lot less one-to-one manga accurate for cuts. They went with different angles and stuff, and I'm totally okay with that. You know, no need to copy what's already been copied of a copy, basically. So, you know, let them do the thing. I like that for certain scenes, they went with that filter, you know, even though it's digitized, that filtered manga kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, shader look.
You guys. Especially in, like, fights.
Yeah, and
well, the fights
that was
had their weird coloring thing where they like went to like not quite inverted color, but like off standard.
It's all really like purple and orange and
yeah. It's like, oh, I'm in fight mode now. Okay.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, and then there were, you know, so even in areas where the content was one to one paced similarly, I noticed they changed some stuff back and forth. Like for Now, this is going off of my memory, which is like from 30 years ago, but the scene that sticks with me from Eps 2 for both original and reboot, there's that part where after Ranma and Kuno have their first duel, and it goes back, cuts away to, you know, Kuno in the classroom with the kanji for baka on his forehead. and he's talking with Nobiki, and he's like, ha, he didn't, and in the original, he says, you know, he doesn't even know how to spell baka correctly. He writes the kanji. He miswrites, and then Nobiki actually corrects him with the correct kanji. And then, you know, there's the famous scene of he just goes, I hate you. She's like, she just kind of snarkily, you know. Nothing makes me more happy, which is like one of the greatest deliveries. Like, I love Nabiki's character so much. I mean, Nami Takayama is like one of my all-time favorites, if not my all-time favorite voice actress. So she delivery in both the original and the reboot were excellent. But in the reboot, Kuno was like, that's not how you spell Kuno. And then she's like, he wasn't spelling Kuno, he was spelling idiot, like baka. So they changed it up a bit, which was interesting, because I believe the original manga was he had baka on his head, and then he misspells baka on the whiteboard as well. But again, it's been like 30 plus years since I read it, so
yeah. Cutting in there, I am also a huge Ranma fan of X-Men. Rereading the manga, I don't know if I ever read all of it, but I'm up to over chapter 100 now. It's all up on the Viz manga app. And you know what? It is fabulous. It's so good. Like, there's a few things that I think in there. I don't think that, particularly while rewatching the original versus the new, and I'm just like, I think the delivery in the original of people's voices and stuff was just so much better. Like the scene with Kuno and Nobiki, like, saw the new one, you're like, oh man, that's good. But you watch the original and the delivery is just like, it's like everything is just 20% better. At least that's my feeling.
I don't abjectly agree. For that scene, I would say I preferred the classics delivery. But I would say in general, especially for the first early episodes of season one, I feel like the voice actors and actresses still hadn't really figured out or built the confidence to like really make the character stand out, because everybody feels to me more muted. Like Ranma feels slightly less brash, Akana feels slightly less violent. You know, just, and to be fair, it was all of these actors. Oh, you know, the biggest one that was known for me was Kasumi. Kiko Inoue was much less angelic sounding in the early season of Ranma. She didn't gain her more, I would call, bell dandy voice till quite a bit later, actually. Like, so I feel like the very early parts of the original, a lot of the voices I felt like almost sounded like a little too standard, like they weren't trying to act. And then they really were giving the characters a more defined voice from like season two on. And that's where the identity for the voices and the characters for me really locked in. And I feel like that was retained for the reboot for sure. Like more or less from when they ended, you know, recording lines for like the movies and OVAs is where they, you know, how they remembered the characters' voices as far as how to perform them. At least that's like my takeaway.
Like when I was comparing the two episodes, the episode two reboot versus original, I actually thought that the reboot was just better, I think, in every way. The original is fine. It's not bad. It's great. But I just feel like everything feels more polished, I don't know, experienced. Maybe you could even say, you guys are talking about, you know, actors coming to their own.
It feels smoother and like a better running machine is making it, I would say.
Both
its good and bad parts.
There was a lot of like, like it has been mentioned before, like a lot of stuff that's kind of drawn out in the original that isn't. It is way quicker paced in the, I wouldn't say way quicker, but you know, it's a much more brisk pace that keeps your attention going. Like I was super, like I'll admit, I'm not a really big fan of Ranma. And I haven't watched a whole lot of it. It's like definitely one of the first anime I ever watched.
I've watched all of it, but I admit I had to go at like double to quadruple speed to make it through the last few seasons, because I was really not that into those. So
yeah, but like I stood engaged through the new one, like, but the whole time.
The new one engaged me as well. I agree with you.
Except for, I will say, when it got to the skating stuff, that thing dragged on for a bit. I kind of was like,
I mean,
hurry up.
In the original, the skating was like 5 episodes or something. It was long. It was pretty long, if I remember right. It was also weird because, like, it was like flashbacked to in the first season because they opted to skip it, and then they went back in season 2 and actually did it. So that was kind of awkward.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
for that was famously weird sequencing thing, but that was just because they weren't even sure if the show would continue at past season 1. So anyway, but I don't know. That was one of the first that was kind of what set that arc is kind of what sets the pace for really the rest of the show, where it's a series of bizarre competitions that always have martial arts tied into it.
Yeah.
and always loops in more characters than just Ranma and Akane, and you know, over time more characters will be introduced, I think. Well, like, you know,
I liked Kuno's sister. I already forgot her name.
Kodachi.
Yeah, Kodachi. I thought that battle was a lot of fun, but just something about the skating one, like, there wasn't enough going on and there was a lot of pausing and deciding what to do that really kind of made it more boring.
I can see how that you feel that way. Like, I would say the skating arc felt the most similar in pacing to the original to me, like, from a pacing standpoint.
See,
but
that's really interesting. I'm glad I asked for that comparison because I had the complete opposite opinion. Like, I thought the original was better than the new one in every way.
Oh.
From animation, pacing, voice acting,
the animation
backgrounds.
I will say it was impressive for even for the day, although they recycled stuff, but like it was high quality stuff
efficiently done. Like,
some of the walk cycles were impressively choppy. You can tell which parts they put more effort into and which parts they didn't.
I mean, if we talk about original TV, I feel like season 1 has this, I have a soft spot for just because it's like the like original, but really for me the peak of the animation and the aired TV stuff was like 2 and 3.
Really?
I feel like I think at seasons 2 and 3 is when to me is what defined Ranma TV for me as being like a really awesome show. And then 4 is kind of, you know, divisive, and then like 5 and 6 is like generally viewed as not good. But I find that interesting, Dylan, that even for season 1, you actually prefer it just abjectly more than the reboot. Because I feel like season 1 is good, but my main gripe with it is that the voice, specifically the voices, still feel a little subdued. And that's my main criticism of it.
That's fair. How do people... for me, this might honestly be the killer. And some of it is because, like, I am a huge Ranma fan and stuff, so my opinion is very different, and so it seems like, hey, the new series may actually be better for people that aren't already committed to living their best Ranma life, which hey, that'd be great. But
that's the case for a lot of remakes, really. It's kind of the whole point of doing one.
Yeah, if you do a good job, really you bring in more people. And
and it's not zero sum, right? Like, you
no,
can enjoy
no,
both.
No, not
like
at all.
I enjoy both quite a lot. I think they both have. That's the thing. The narrative I despise the most these days, where people are like, "Oh, you either like the remake or you like the original. You can't like." But like, no, you can definitely enjoy both for totally different reasons. And I would say, I think the reboot does a great job of making it more accessible for modern audiences.
Mm-hmm.
By changing certain sensibilities, increasing the pacing, but still keeping the core of the characters and, you know, the spirit of the series, you know, authentic to the source material. And of course, for me, the original is like a formative experience for me in my, like, outside even anime. Like, Ranma was such a hugely formative thing for me. Like, when I first started watching Ranma, I was like, man, this is like, I couldn't imagine a property like that existing, let alone back in the 80s and 90s. So, you know, that's valuable for my life experience. So yeah, I think both are great. I think the reboot justifies itself by changing enough and modernizing enough that it's worth a watch outside of the original. And vice versa, I think it's totally, like, okay to go back and say, oh, I wonder what they did change. And be like, oh, that's interesting.
If you want to watch the extended cut, you go watch the original.
Yeah. How do people feel about music from original versus new?
I would say that's where I would almost 100% almost always choose original. Like, the original soundtrack, original openings, endings are just... For me, I said it during the Rick Kenzoki episode. Like, I like the new Ranma's like opening well enough, but it is far and away my least favorite if you put it against any other Ranma opening or ending.
Really?
I
don't know if I want to say one is better or worse than the other, but I did notice one that, man, it is a really good opening. The original is really good. It's very stylish. They do recycle some animation, which I take some points off for, but it holds up real well. But the new one is also pretty good. It's not my favorite. I know we talked about this in the Kenzokis. It doesn't rank for me, but the ending I think is excellent. I love the new ending. It is so good.
I like the style of it. I like what they're doing with it. Mm-hmm. I just don't like the song. It doesn't feel very Ranma to me.
It feels,
again,
it felt
completely
too
subjective. But...
Yeah, my subjective is there, like, it's cool, it's well done. I just felt like it seemed like it's too... I'm trying to think of the word. Like, it's too soon.
That's why I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I kind of get
well. That's one of the reasons I like it.
I will say with the reboot opening, the section where Ranma, Kane, Shampoo, and Ryoga are doing Tai Chi, like I was like, Mappa, you brought out your A game there. That part's very, very well animated.
Mm-hmm. And there's other parts that are kind of fun. The new one definitely makes some callbacks to the original one where, like,
yep.
It has the film strip going guy with kind of like the repeated stuff, which is similar to Ranma doing the Tai Chi in the background of the original
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I want to take this in a different way. And I read it somewhere, you know, one of those little, I'll still call it Twitter post things or whatever, that someone had said was like, Ranma is really just about a gender fluid guy who tries to get along with everyone and keeps getting into trouble.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree.
And I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. It's like, I wouldn't have ever have like thought of it that way, and certainly not at the time. It was always just kind of like, oh, that's weird. But certainly as the
not in the early part, but
no,
especially later on,
Ranma
leverages the gender swapping a lot,
yeah, like
to
the
his
manga
is and her advantage,
yeah. It's mm-hmm. one of those things where I haven't watched, you know, ton more of the anime, basically the first season stuff there, but like, yeah, I'm up to like, you know, a quarter of the way through the manga, and like, it's an interesting thing where Ranma becomes much more comfortable with, you know, having these swaps in fluid and taking advantage of being girl Ranma at times and taking advantage of being boy Ranma at times, and is very, you know, I think to use a term these days, like very gender fluid, which is an interesting kind of a modern interpretation of a thing that's older.
Yeah, completely agree. I had a discussion about it with friends in that kind of community, and they totally agree. They're like, yeah, they always liked Ranma for that kind of messaging, even if it wasn't, like, you know, necessarily intended for it. Just the fact that that's how it, you know, developed,
yeah.
Was and then they, you know, with the remake, they love how it's still being represented, even though obviously initially, you know, it's kind of a conflicting thing for Ranma. Like, he doesn't want to be able to transform into a girl. Like, he's like, he says, I'm a guy, but, you know, over time they can see that it's something that he starts to live with. And so it for them, it's kind of like speaks to the, you know, the challenges, right, of being, you know, in that community. So I think it speaks to them at a deep level, which is pretty cool. And you don't even have to see it that way to enjoy it. But if you do, I think it's, you know, totally great that it's you know, something that speaks to them. And
yeah, I think that's the best way to frame it, is like, yeah, it wasn't made for them, but it speaks to them really mm-hmm. well. And yeah, I think that's good. It doesn't play these things in a bad way, which is nice.
Yeah, and it doesn't like try to turn it into an agenda or anything.
Yeah,
right.
It's
there. It's the topic, and it's there, and
it's goofy, you know, that's, and fun.
It's goofy, yeah, and it's fun, and it's, and it feels natural. It doesn't feel mm-hmm. forced or ham-fisted. As far as you know, within the scope of the series, obviously, if you're looking at it objectively in real world, it's like, well, that's a wild thing. Like, you get water dumped on you, you get turned into a panda. Like, what are we mm-hmm. talking about here? But you know, in the scope of the world, it totally makes sense, and I think that's pretty rad.
One last thing that I was thinking as well is the other part too that I think is good is that everyone around like becomes aware of it and just accepts and is like, yeah, whatever, it's Ranma, whatever. The only one who doesn't ever get that is Kuno.
Mm-hmm. And that just becomes a running gag.
Yeah, basically. That's just a running gag, just as much as Akane never figuring out that Ryoga is Peach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if she didn't figure it out during the ice skating arc, yeah, she's not going to figure it out.
Yeah, ever.
I want to come back to that, actually, because I asked my wife if she had any input question or anything, and we had a little discussion, and she came around to, you know, clearly the best character, Nabiki. And she's like, okay.
Yes. I'm glad we're all in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, clearly.
So she's like, okay, so Nabiki, super smart, super observant, like, how the heck does she not like realize that Ryoga is Pichon? Because her point was either like, well, either she doesn't realize, which is kind of like weird and dumb, or like she does, but she's not taking advantage of it. Like she's not using it to, you know, either make some money or get some other advantage or something. So I could be off
think there would be major blackmail opportunity for Ryoga, though I guess he wouldn't have that much money.
She's not like completely heartless, though.
No,
right? Like
mm-hmm. it's,
you don't really see that in the first season. But like anybody who's read the manga or watched more of it, like she definitely is in it for herself. But she's far from being like a heartless monster.
No, she's not a monster. But it is one of those things you'd be like, you'd expect maybe, and maybe you could always be like, well, maybe it's something they could get to or something. But it's never really made. I don't feel like it's made clear that anyone in the Tendo household realizes that Ryoga is Pichon. Is that correct?
That's actually a good... I believe you're right.
No, at least...
Oh, someone does, right?
The father does, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, because there's a scene where Pichon dives into the bathtub
and Ryoga
with him, and then Ryoga walks and he just sits there kind of, you know, dumbfounded. You're right.
Okay.
But he's almost, Solon almost is like a piece of furniture at some point. Like he just kind of ceases to exist after a while as far as being an interactable character.
He's like the most, probably the most like stereotypical like 80s detached parent. It's kind of like, mm-hmm. except he's actually kind of there, but he doesn't actually know anything that's going on anywhere with anything. And anytime anyone tries to tell him something, he just shakes his head and goes into the other room. Unless someone's threatening one of his daughters, then he gets into giant demon head mode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's still ultra protective.
Can we talk about Genma? Why is he never a human?
And it's the most. It's the best. That might
he gets a
part time
job as
at
Tofu Sensei's place as the panda.
Yeah. You know, I think
maybe that being a panda is as comfortable as it looks.
I think it's one. It may be my favorite thing in all of Ranma that he literally just stops being a human. He's just like, it's not worth it. Anytime I transform into human, I get turned back into a panda. I'm just going with this hashtag panda life. And
it's just a mascot character, really, right?
Like, yeah, he is a super mascot character in the weirdest way, too, of like, oh, who's the mascot character? Some little cute thing? You're like, no, it's this guy's dad. He turns into a giant panda.
It blew my mind near the end of the reboots first season where he turns into Genma again as a human and then says some lines before turning like, back into a panda. It's like, wait, what?
And it was weird. The line that he was starting to write onto the sign before, which was a nice gag.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like one of the most, I would say, iconic things about Ranma, right? Is Genma with his handwritten wooden signs.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, one of the, I mean, there's a lot of, I would say, iconic imagery from Ranma.
There's nothing I ever really thought of.
I feel that that gag is more in the anime than it is in the manga.
I don't know. I think it was about equally represented in both, because he is a panda a lot in the manga as well.
Oh, yeah. No, he's totally a panda. I just don't feel like there's as many of the written sign stuff there, but... So let's take the psychological approach on this and what it represents him being the panda is, again, like the 80s detached Japanese father, you know, 70s, 80s detached Japanese father who's not there because he's working all the time. In this case, he's literally not a human because he's always a panda.
Except he's the opposite. Like, he was the most involved father.
Involved, but also, like, most incompetent, right? Like,
yeah.
All of this was basically his fault. Like, basically.
True.
And he was the catalyst for almost, I would say the vast majority of Ranma's misery is actually, like, initiated by Genma. So, I think being a panda is just his way to escape it.
Yes, that's probably
and not
true.
Not take accountability for being a huge screw-up.
Oh, man, I like that. I like that. Okay, so panda is his escape from reality. He's like, what are you going to do? Blame a panda? Can you yell at a panda? You can't do anything. I'm a panda. Because let's also not forget that, I'm sure it'll come later, but that his dad also promised Ranma to Ukyo in exchange for the Okonomiyaki cart.
Okonomiyaki cart.
So,
yeah, I mean, we've only seen half of the cast, like, active cast so far. Like, we just saw Shampoo, we haven't seen Moose yet, Cologne has not appeared. Oh,
Shampoo
actually
hasn't even transformed yet.
Yeah, she hasn't gotten to the point of going to Jusenkyo herself yet. Actually, this does bring up a point. My wife watched a good amount of this with me, and she has good fond memories of the original, but there was definitely a character from the original that, she was absolutely and utterly disgusted by, and I don't blame her, and that is Happosai.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a question that I've been seeing around is, one, how will they deal with him? And two, are they going to even, integrate him? I feel like excluding him will be so hard because he is a major story arc villain for, like, a couple of vols of the manga.
Oh, he's there a ton.
He's omnipresent. Yeah, I mean, he's the panty thief, right? Like he's always the thorn on everyone's side.
You can't
he even
ever
has
defeat
history.
Him.
Yeah, he even has history with Cologne. Like he's on that power level, right? Like he's kind of this omnipresent, like invincible gremlin, basically.
Yeah.
So, I'm really interested to see how they deal with him because obviously they're trying to modernize the show. A lot of what he does is kind of very counter to all of that.
Yeah.
So,
do we know how many seasons they have contracted?
Another core is guaranteed.
That one I know, but because I wonder, will they get to him in that one, or will they?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, who knows, right? Because
they could just dodge it.
Yeah, it could just not get to that point, or they could just skip it. Yeah, that's plausible. I don't necessarily see this going as long as the original one. To me, it doesn't.
No, nothing makes goes sense. That long anymore, or at least not a Netflix thing.
Well, unless it gets the ratings.
You were saying, Mike, you're just saying UI was what?
I was saying the UI remake was 4-core, but that still is, much shorter than the original.
Yeah, 52 eps-ish, not even, no wait, 4-core is 12 times 4, so 48 eps, yeah. So, yeah, and the original was well above 100. So, yeah, it could just be that they're not going to deal with it by just not getting to that point in the story. Because Happosai takes a bit to get introduced, if I recall.
Yeah,
it's been
and
like
even at the time...
Oh, yeah, so...
Like, even at the time, Happosai was just... I'm very curious. I'm sure there's interviews and stuff with Takahashi, but I'm sure someone's been like, Happosai... Where? Why? Like, this guy is so despicable.
She probably will probably be like, yeah, I just wanted to make, like, the most revolting and, you know, hateable character in the history of manga.
I mean, I feel like there's also, again, a product of its time. Like, that was not an unusual trope back then, right? Like,
no.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Totally.
No, the panty thief wearing, going and flipping up girls' skirts and doing all of these other things that are hopefully still not acceptable.
Yes.
I
remember watching it. I mean, I have a vague memory of this, that even as a kid watching this, thinking that he was weird and creepy. But, like, there's definitely a, you know, just a cultural thing that we didn't have over in America. We did not have the trope of a creepy old man who steals panties.
Yeah, that's a distinctly Japanese thing. So, unfortunately, yeah. Even to this day, like, I see videos, like YouTube videos of people doing, like, apartment tours, you know, like foreigners trying to get apartments, and when they're, like, young women, they're told, like, oh, yeah, sorry, we only have first floor units, so, you know, you might want to be careful because people might, like, steal your clothing from your drying line out from your veranda. And it's like, Jesus, that's still a thing. So, yeah, I think it's, like,
what the heck, Japan? Trope, because people do line dry their clothes out on their balconies.
Yeah, exactly. That's much more standard over there. Mm-hmm. Although these days a lot of people do it in their bathrooms because they have the big fan thing. But I want to kind of pivot back. So Dylan, you know, was mentioning he watched a good part of season one original and then went to the manga. I actually finally got off my lazy butt and purchased the OVAs in the movie pack on Blu-ray because I should have done that 10 years ago. And, you know, been watching those afterwards. I know after I watched this, I'm like, man, that was really great. I forgot how much I loved Ranma. Not really, but, you know, that was kind of the motivation. And then I went to the OVAs and I was like, ah, yes, this is what, when I talk about long-term core memories on Ranma, the OVAs are for sure what I really first think about, because it's not fair to compare the OVAs to the original TV, because, I mean, OVA budget, OVA, you know, quality is just going to be dramatically better. But when you talk about art quality, animation, you know, all of that, the characters, oh, everybody knew exactly how the characters were to be voiced and everything. And then the openings and endings, just all just like chef's kiss. Like, to me, like, you know, on the hierarchy of Ranma stuff, like, to me, the OVAs are the pinnacle of Ranma media. I can't think of anything that outdoes the OVAs. I even enjoy them more than the manga themselves, because for me, a huge part of Ranma is the voice acting, or those iconic voices. So, you know, I've watched maybe half of, there's like 12 OVAs and then 3 movies, I believe, total.
Sounds so, right. I got that set too, because it was like $30, and I was like,
yeah,
I have the import DVDs of the OVAs, but I'm like, might as well just have them on a
Blu-ray. I mean, I have not to flex, but I have the import DVDs of the OVAs autographed by Atsuko Nakajima from AX in like 2001 or something.
Very
so
nice flex.
That's gonna be one of those buried with me sort of things. But but as far as making it easily watchable, having Blu-rays, you know, is quite a bit nicer, and the masters are immaculate. Like, they cleaned up very, very nicely. So
nice. Must have done one of the must have been a Japanese master that they got.
I mean, let's be real. Like, we could talk about Viz a bit. Like,
yeah,
that's like Ranma is what put Viz Media on the map, right? I mean, it is their flagship poster child from the get-go. Like, back when they had the really weird boxy V logo, like, that is, you know, Ranma's been there from the beginning for them. So,
yeah,
you know, they pay the extra, they do go an extra mile for, I believe they're also translating the Rumiko Takahashi Big Anniversary Anthology art book that came out last year in Japan.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, that's releasing, I believe, sometime this summer. So, I'm definitely picking that up.
Nice.
I wanted to pick it up when I was in Japan, but it weighed like 7 pounds, and, you know, the whole evaluation of hauling around heavy stuff when you already bought a bunch of stuff. So, but anyway, where was I going with that?
On the Viz thing, yeah, like, Ranma was, it's one of those things where you can, think back now, but I feel like that was probably like the first like TV series thing I was really like aware of. And it was always someone who's like, oh man, have you seen this Ranma thing? There's this dude who turns into a pig. And you're like, what?
Yeah, not many long series were getting US release at the time.
And I believe it was the last one. It was almost like they wanted to finish it, that they continued probably beyond when it was really like financially or whatever made sense, but continued to release the last of it as like dubbed on VHS. It was like their last dubbed VHS thing, because it was like, well, you know what? This was the whole thing that like got us on the market. So we're going to commit to finishing this out. I remember something about that when that happened.
Viz is actually pretty good about finishing what they start. It's pretty rare that they completely can things. I mean, it does happen, but...
Yeah.
Speaking of dubs, I mean, obviously I don't watch them normally, but way back in the day, you know, I was just, especially middle school, I was just consuming anime in any way, shape, or form. My sister had a friend who was one of those guys that knew a guy that basically, like, pirated everything, every VHS known to man. And so he had this, like, titanic anime VHS collection of various pirated things from both, you know, Japanese and American distributors. Because this is, like, in the early 90s. So by then, you know, Viz had a modest catalog, and, you know, the other distributors had some. And I remember I saw my first episode of Ranma dubbed like that. And I remember thinking that it was not, like, revolting to hear. And probably to this day, I could be wrong, but is Ranma considered to be one of the better dubs in the across the history of anime, especially of the old era? Like, am I like?
I actually haven't rewatched it dubbed. I had a similar recollection of it, that like I remember being like, oh, this is fine, except for the OVA episode where they sing the Christmas song.
Ah, well, yeah, let's be real. That one was painful.
But that also means that I watched enough dubbed Ranma that I saw like the OVAs dubbed and everything too.
I had no taste back then, so my opinion doesn't matter. I would just watch whatever the video store had, and oftentimes that would be one ep in English and one ep in Japanese, or one tape in English and one tape in Japanese, and I wouldn't even notice.
Yeah, you'd be like, what's the difference? There's no difference.
Yeah,
you go back and slap your teenage self in the face for that and many other reasons.
It's kind of amazing some of the things we put up with just because of so much less availability.
Yeah.
I mean, back then you get whatever you can get, right? Like anime, especially domesticated, so super expensive back in the early 90s. Like a tape of like two episodes, like I think tapes had two episodes on them, and they were like $35 to $50,
and you had back to pay the sub tax too if you wanted the sub. Yeah, ones, like an extra $5.
Like, yeah, and like this is in early 1990 dollars, so like adjusted for inflation, we're talking like for two episodes you're paying like $70-$80, like today bucks, and it's like, damn.
Yeah, even today's Japanese media prices aren't that bad.
Tossing in the machine, like according to the internet, and take it whatever, but it says, you know, $30 in 95 is about $62 today. So want to talk to people being spoiled, you're like, hey, how about you pay $65 for two episodes dubbed only, VHS quality.
You're paying like $1.25 a minute at that point.
Yeah, you're paying import OVA prices.
I remember going into Suncoast to buy my Ava VHS as they came out.
RIP.
And yeah.
I love Suncoast.
And I would go to the counter because, I started on watching the dubbed because that's what they had at the video store. So I just finished it dubbed. And I would go in and buy it dubbed. And they're like, you know, this is dubbed, right? There's the sub ones, the other tape. I'm like, yes, I know. This is what I want.
Man, getting some shade even there from the Suncoasties.
Yeah, just wild.
So we have a few minutes left, but I want us to circle back. So earlier in tonight's episode, we talked about, you know, what's more famous, this or Inuyasha. And I would agree in the modern era, Inuyasha is more popular. mostly because of its it was aired in the West, where Ranma never had a proper airing. I wish I kept the article, but it turns out sometime in the early 2000s, Cartoon Network was actually interested in picking up the airing rights for Ranma, but they said that it ultimately was not practical because, I quote, there was far too much nudity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So from an accessibility standpoint, it was just not there. So I really wonder if somehow, because I mean, if anybody watched Dragon Ball in the States way back in the day, like, you know, they show a bunch of Goku wieners when he was a little kid, mm-hmm. and in Japan it's a big deal, but here when they did that, they just like drew really horrible like bushes and things on top, like overlaid on top, and let that go. So I feel like they could have maybe gone that way. Maybe that was there was too much of it in Ranma even to do that. But
yeah.
I really wonder how the greater anime community would perceive it in this era if, you know, it actually got to air on TV. I really do. I still feel like Inuyasha probably has a deeper reach just because it's more of a like a cohesive adventure like yeah. story. Ranma kind of becomes very like episodic, and by nature that's how Takahashi designed it, so I still think that Inuyasha, and I know I love both properties, obviously I own all of Inuyasha R2, so you know I'm probably the only lunatic that did that, so but you know I love both properties dearly. They serve very different purposes for me. Dylan, yeah, go ahead.
Just on the Inuyasha popularity thing, plus it's a you know, cute teenage girl growing coming of age story is set in a fantasy world, which especially also at the time is Inuyasha coming up, like huge female audience for that.
True, yeah.
That is still there.
That's also kind of coincides, the rise of Inuyasha coincides with the rise of kind of the female anime fan.
Yeah, and that was like, yeah, that was one of those huge properties that was like, guys were kind of, I feel like, and I, you know, my own perspective, I feel like most guys are kind of like, all right, yeah, Inuyasha's cool. But like, I think if you went and you talked to girls of that ilk, they'd be like, oh my God, Inuyasha is my favorite thing ever.
Yeah. And it's almost like you see the stair stepping, right? Like I started with Inuyasha and then it was Fruits Basket mm-hmm. and then it was like Ouran Host Club. And, you know, from there it, and those are, they're fant, all of those are great properties, but definitely meant for more for the female gaze.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's totally fine. Like there's plenty of anime for everybody now, far too much of it in my opinion, but, but yeah, so. You know, with our closing few minutes, you know, any final thoughts, you know, additional insights, you know, random nuggets of info regarding Ranma in any capacity?
Well, we Mike, never yeah, really touched on it, but just one thing that I liked was that how differently they did the little recap segment of the plot
yeah.
at the beginning of every episode.
There was like that 16-bit fighting game one that
yeah,
was like
super
awesome.
Yeah, that was
when
I really noticed it.
Yeah.
I did definitely. Appreciate that, yeah, because they started to show that on like episode 3 or something, and I was kind of like, oh man, I'm traumatized from having seen that before, the same clip before every single episode of original Ranma season 2 plus. But then it was like for everyone they did a little different, which was a cool, you know, extra little thing that was kind of a funny way to do something like that that could have just been
I only started paying attention to those like halfway through, and then really paying attention, so I don't know if this is true, but it seemed like the audio for it was exactly the same every time, just the animation was different.
I believe you're correct. Yes.
That's,
and I think that was cool. A tongue-in-cheek reference to how they did it, where it was literally the same exact thing every single episode, so it got very redundant, especially if you're watching it, you know, in like a binging format. Mm-hmm. Although from something from the classic I do miss is the gong and then the, you know, the Ranma, like that was
yeah.
that brings back a long forgotten era of my life. Like,
though they have just enough of the notes at the start of the OP to kind of give you the effect, though. Interestingly, yeah. I feel like they're slowed down compared to the original. Like, the original was OP was just so frenetic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Nah, I think they're fairly close in terms. I think the new one is a little more tongue twistery than.
Yeah, the lyrics are a lot faster paced than the original. But I think like the cadence of the song is a little bit maybe slower, but the spoken lyrics are definitely faster to my ear anyway. Yeah, the song's okay for the new one. I think the original op is still is better, but even then, original op is not even in my top three favorites. Probably it's fine, but yeah,
it's
most of that goes to Ova's.
Still be remembering it 20 years from now, and I won't be remembering the new one, probably, I'll be honest.
Exactly. I think that's the takeaway there.
But nostalgia.
And that's
more
about, when I saw it than...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, that puts an end to our Ranma episode. Remind me, Kenzoku, have we finalized what our next episode will be?
Yes, we have. It is in honor of the upcoming 4K IMAX release of Princess Mononoke in the theaters. One day only, our next episode will be on the film Princess Mononoke, or Mononoke Hime.
Indeed. Go get your tickets now. If you're hearing this episode in time, I believe it's March 26th through April 1st is the runtime that I saw, but it could vary depending on your locations. But yeah, anyway, so we have that to look forward to for next time. But until then, this is Amo Kenzoku signing off. Saraba.